There are two Old Testament lessons or readings for today. They came from both last week and this week's assigned lectionary passage, beginning with Micah 6 passage. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before God with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? God has told you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God? And from the prophet Isaiah, a similar theme. Is not this the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of injustice? To undo the thongs of the yoke? To let the oppressed go free and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry? And bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see them naked, to cover them, and not to hide yourself from your own kin. Then your light shall break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up quickly. Your vindicator shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then ye shall call, and the Lord will answer. And you shall cry for help, and God will say, here I am. If you remove the yoke from among you, the pointing of the finger, the speaking of evil, if you offer your food to the hungry and satisfy the needs of the afflicted, then your light shall rise in the darkness, and your gloom be like the noonday. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your need in parched places, and make your bones strong, and you will be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters never fail. God bless the reading and the hearing of this word. Amen. I want to begin by saying that I've retitled this sermon because after I finished writing it, I never got around to the salt and light part. So, from Matthew. So that will occur at some later date. So now it's basically just justice, kindness, and humility. At this year's National Prayer Breakfast, just this past Thursday morning, President Donald Trump, when talking about our nation's liberties, declared, among those freedoms is the right to worship according to your own beliefs. Amen. That is why I will get rid of and totally destroy the Johnson Amendment and allow our representatives of faith to speak freely and without fear of retribution. That would be in reference to the IRS. And then the following morning's Tulsa World newspaper had a front page article entitled, Pastors Divide on Politics in the Pulpit. Trump pledges to end political limits on churches. And one pastor in that article said that pastors at times want to address issues from the pulpit that might have some political overtones and are afraid to do so because they fear losing their IRS tax-exempt status. Well, that's an unfortunate and ill-informed statement. Because that's not what the Johnson Amendment is about. We preachers are not prevented from speaking about such things. The amendment was proposed by then-Senator Lyndon B. Johnson in 1954 and added to the IRS tax code. It states that any nonprofit organization with a 501c3 tax-exempt status, which includes churches, cannot engage in political activities, specifically conducting a political campaign activity to intervene in elections to public office. What preachers cannot do then is make public statements of positions in favor of or in opposition to any candidate for public office. So to say that I or any other preacher cannot address political issues that violate an understanding of Christian morality and ethics or perpetuate injustice or discrimination simply isn't true. The Old Testament prophets and Jesus himself addressed these issues, which indeed were political issues, all the time and without reserve. And I personally agree with those that believe that changing the law will do more harm than good, leading to even more divisiveness. By the way, during the heyday of the moral majority, many pastors from the religious right explicitly violated this amendment and told their congregations who to vote for, or told them who not to vote for. That's why you will never hear me tell you from this pulpit who you should vote for. However, knew that was coming. However, you will hear me speak in opposition to those values that clearly appear to violate the ways and teachings of Jesus and our Judeo-Christian values. Seminary friend of mine, the Reverend Beth Merrill Neal at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Portland, preached a sermon last Sunday in response to the executive order to suspend the entry of refugees into the United States for 120 days, to stop receiving refugees from Syria indefinitely, and to bar from entering the United States for 90 days refugees from seven predominantly Muslim countries: Iraq, Syria, Iran, Sudan, Libya, Somalia, and Yemen. Curiously, as an aside, none of the predominantly Muslim countries from which actual terrorists have caused casualties in this country are on that list. Beth, who always has a wonderful way with words, states beautifully what I would like to convey to you this morning. She preached last Sunday. I know there are some here who would love to hear political sermons every week, and some who never ever want to hear a political sermon. Because I believe so deeply in welcoming the stranger, every time I write a sermon that veers into the picture, into the political rather, I picture the faces of those that I know in the congregation whose politics, I imagine, are different from mine. And because I think we come to worship for a variety of reasons, and because I know we need to be encouraged as much as challenged, I will not preach a political sermon every week, I promise. Mainly because it's way too exhausting. But this week I have felt compelled. Because politics has collided head on into faith. And Beth added her own prophetic voice and perspective. This executive order shows no justice, no kindness, and no humility. It flies in the face of the biblical imperative to welcome the stranger, to remember that the Israelites were refugees and that Jesus was a refugee when the family fled to Egypt to escape the political persecution of King Herod. Now, you may have noticed our Old Testament reference to that passage that we heard from Micah 6. In verse 8 says, God has told you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. This is the biblical imperative in which we are called to live. And yes, I am all for national security, and I understand the concerns. But because of the understanding of my call as a pastor and my responsibilities as a Christian, I personally believe that justice trumps security. And yes, that is a political statement. But it is also a statement of faith, of which you may or may not agree. And yes, preachers with a different opinion have a right to express their beliefs from their pulpits. I just wonder, however, how do they use the scriptures to validate their position of exclusion? I guess one of the things that bothers me most is that this administration's version of extreme vetting blatantly favors and gives preferential treatment to Christians over Muslims. And in my book, that clearly fits the definition of categorical discrimination. Something else that violates my understandings of the ways and teachings of Jesus. Well, I can't tell you how many articles I've read this week, including those from the National Office of the Presbyterian Church, USA. And they condemn this executive order. Religion and politics? You betcha. They too cite scriptures such as Leviticus 19, 33 to 34. When an alien resides with you in your land, you shall not oppress the alien. The alien who resides with you shall be to you as citizens among you. You shall love the alien as yourself, for you are aliens in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. We are not called by Jesus or by God to ban the other. Earlier in that same chapter of Leviticus is the command repeated by Jesus. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And most of what I am witnessing these days, however, is fear of neighbor, not love. I felt a bit of vindication in my position about all this when I read that Pope Francis issued a blistering statement just yesterday against Christians supporting what many believe is indeed intended as a Muslim ban. The Pope stated, "The sickness, or you can say the sin, that Jesus condemns most is hypocrisy, which is precisely what is happening when someone claims to be a Christian but does not live according to the teaching of Jesus. You cannot be a Christian without living like a Christian." Referencing the parable of the sheep and the goats, Pope Francis added, "You cannot be a Christian without practicing the Beatitudes. You cannot be a Christian without doing what Jesus teaches us in Matthew 25. Well, that parable is found in Matthew 25, 31 to 46, and reads in part, "For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. A stranger, and you gave me no welcome. Naked, and you gave me no clothing. Ill and in prison, and you did not care for me. I say to you, what you have not done for one of the least of these, you have not done for me." And Pope Francis concluded, "It's hypocrisy to call yourself a Christian and chase away a refugee or someone seeking help, someone who is hungry or thirsty, toss out someone who is in need of my help. If I say I am a Christian but do not do these things, I am a hypocrite." All nations, he stated, must focus on service to the poorest, the sick, and those who have abandoned their homelands in search of a better future for themselves and their families. And putting ourselves at the service of the neediest, Pope Francis said, "We will experience that we already are united. It is in God's mercy that unites us." And I stated that a lot less gracefully when I posted a meme on my Facebook page earlier this week that read, "If the church isn't for the suffering, The church isn't for Christ. So where does that leave us? Well, I encourage you, first step perhaps, to read the Something for the Spirit article in this month's church newsletter. It's entitled, Let's Fight the Good Fight with Kindness, written by Tom Rapsis a few weeks ago and posted on the Pantheos.com website. He begins, could we be any more divided as a country? It seems like Americans are now standing on two sides of a divide as wide as the Grand Canyon. And it's impossible to get inside the heads of the side that doesn't agree with you. What are they thinking? I'm as outraged as anyone. But on a certain level, I know that's not always good. You see, like you, I have got friends and families on the other side. And the easy thing to do right now is to focus on how different we are. To take another's well-intentioned beliefs and demonize them for it. So how do we handle what are indeed for many of us very trying and anxious times? Yes, we need to stand up for what we believe in and fight the good fight. But I suggest that when we're dealing with those closest to us, that we do it with a little less outrage and a little more kindness. So I encourage, even implore each of us to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with our God. Amen.